So what good is it to show up to church only to hear the words, "Remember that you are dust and to dust you shall return"? Why do we do that? What compels us to come to church, to go out of our way, to even get a babysitter, to come to church on Ash Wednesday night to be reminded that we are going to die? Surely we know that already, right? Surely we don't need reminding that we're going to die. I kind of think we do need reminding. I kind of think we live most of our time. I know I certainly live most of my time in a way that does not at all reflect that I anticipate dying one day. And I don't think I or you are really to blame for that. We live in a death-denying culture. We live in a world that is obsessed with doing anything it can to distract you from the hard truth that you will die someday. You know, one of the sad things that I regularly get to witness by virtue of my work is witnessing people die who are woefully unprepared to die. And it's true that not all of us are granted that luxury of being able to have a sense of when that day might come for us, but it is the case that most of us end up having that opportunity. Yet, over and over again, we see this. This has happened in your family. This just happened in my family again. Someone dies and it turns out they didn't do any of the paperwork. That they have been living in such a way, assuming that they would just never die. You can see this most clearly in the hospital. In the industry of modern medicine. One of my old teachers used to call the industry of modern medicine, is the science of trying to get out of life alive. You've experienced this too. You've had loved ones in the hospitals, your parents, your grandparents, and you've been trying to have conversations about what it means to end life well, and nobody there is equipped to help you have those conversations. All it is about treatments that will continue to prolong their life without any common sense about the end towards which those lives are oriented. And there is so much that's put in front of us every day, every week, that is just trying to distract you from your own mortality. Think about the richest people in our world. The richest people in our world have accumulated more wealth than they could spend in 10 lifetimes. Yet they're still running the rat race. They're still collecting money, more and more money, as if they're going to live forever. And half of those rich people are using a lot of that money to invent digital, disembodied meta-universes that are themselves not subject to death and decay. I'm sympathetic with it. What I want you to hear on this Ash Wednesday is the beautiful but hidden underside of those harsh words. Remember that you are dust, but to dust you shall return. The beautiful and hidden underside of those words resides in just the first four words. Remember that you are. Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return. But not yet. It's not time to return yet. You're alive now. And my fear, my pastoral fear, as I look out on the way that I live my life, as I look out on the way that we all live our lives, is that we're so afraid of our own mortality, we're so afraid of facing that hard truth in the face, that we're actually missing our actual life that's happening on a daily basis. That's a miracle. That your mom, that your dad, that they fell in love, that that seed found that egg that ended up being you, and now you live in Austin, Texas? Did you ever see that coming? I did not. And that you're here tonight in Barton Hills to share this time with these people, that's a miracle. That is a beautiful, beautiful privilege. Remember that you are at all. How amazing is that? It's the same thing as saying, remember that you are dust and to dust you shall return. They're just two sides of the same coin. That you will die one day means that you have the gift of being alive today. And that is something that we need to wake up to and cherish more often, more frequently. This sounds like it's about to turn into some like very New Agey, vague spiritual sermon. So let me get real specific before I end. I have three suggestions. This is as practical as I ever get in my preaching. I have three suggestions for how to cultivate this sense of the giftedness of life over this season of Lent. I commend to you the three very old school, traditional Lenten disciplines of fasting, penitence, and almsgiving. Fasting, penitence, and almsgiving. It may be tempting to think of these practices, we call them disciplines because they're not easy or necessarily fun to do. It might be tempting to think of those things as kind of life-denying practices in a way, or life-cutting-off practices. Think fasting, you're literally cutting yourself off from nourishment, from life-giving nourishment. In almsgiving, you're cutting yourself off from your own resources, from that which could provide more sustainable life for you and your family. And confession and penitence, you're opening up spiritual wounds. They're not always easy to deal with. It might be natural to think of these things as things that make it more difficult to feel alive. But I would just like you to consider the possibility that they are the opposite. That's precisely what they're for. Because you know how this works. If you're just sitting alone and you think to yourself, oh, I'm just going to really be in this moment. What do I want to do? Your heart will automatically start reaching towards the Doritos. Which is what I did about 30 minutes ago. Your heart will start reaching towards things that are not necessarily always good for you. But these things, think about fasting. Think about being hungry. It's not a particularly delightful or pleasurable experience. But it is a very embodied experience. You feel very much in your own body when you feel hungry. How many of us, I am the chief sinner in this department, but how many of us just basically live life without ever being hungry? There is always food at my disposal. Again, we live in Austin, Texas. South Lamar is right there. Do you know how much good food is right there at our disposal all the time? We never allow ourselves to experience that feeling. And so again, can just be ever more tempted to live in this kind of disembodied existence. Not to mention the fact that the feeling of being hungry is just a good thing to do occasionally so that you can feel what lots of people across the rest of the world have to feel like regularly. Yeah. There's people in Ukraine tonight that are very hungry and they had no idea they were going to be so hungry 10 days ago. It's a nice way of feeling solidarity with those who are less fortunate than us too. Through your own body. Think about almsgiving. We don't even know what almsgiving, where it has left our cultural vocabulary. Think about almsgiving. Here's what almsgiving is. It's giving money to poor people. People who have money give money to those who don't have as much. But here's what I invite you to do. I'm going to do this. I'm saying it out loud so that I will actually do it. Hold myself accountable. Take a $50 bill, take a $20 bill even, to the bank and exchange it for all singles. Keep it in your car. And every time you see somebody asking for money, give them money. Every time you stop at a stoplight, you win the stoplight jackpot, you're at the front, you're trying to decide whether or not to make eye contact with the person asking for money, just roll down your window, make eye contact with them, give them some money, introduce yourself. Again, not a very pleasurable experience, not an easy experience, often, yeah, not even fun at all. But an embodied experience, an in-the-moment experience, a human connection experience, a waking up actually to a disparity that we live 99% of our lives choosing to ignore that it exists in the first place, that some of us have money and some of us don't. To wake up to a not very, you know, appetizing reality is still waking up to reality. Confession is the hardest one. If you have never made a confession, if you've never scheduled an appointment with a priest and come and done that liturgy, I invite you to consider doing that for the first time this Lenten season. It's an underutilized gift that we have at our disposal in the Episcopal Church. We think it's just the Romans that do it. They got their cute little booths and, you know, all that. We don't do the booths. It's a bit more of a human experience for us. But it's still there in the prayer book. It is a gift offered to us from the tradition of the church. And it is a scary one. It can feel like a scary one. But let me encourage you along these lines. It only ends one way. Reconciliation of a penitent only ends one way. It's not a mystery novel. You can read the end. You can open your prayer book in your pew right now. It ends with the forgiveness of sins. It ends with the priest announcing God's absolution of your mistakes and wrongdoings. Don't underestimate the capacity that sin has to keep you from living your life, to keep you from being awake in this world, to keep you from experiencing the miracle that you are at all. These are the tools the church has offered to us, and I commend them to you. I commend them to you to consider utilizing them. If anybody sees me at a stoplight not rolling my window down, call me out. Amen.